Lord Russell, you seem to be a very happy person. Have you always been so?
No, certainly not. I've had periods of happiness and periods of unhappiness. Luckily for me, the periods of happiness seem to lengthen as I grow older.
But insofar as you have been happy, was this conscious planning or did it happen by accident?
Well, there's only been conscious planning as far as my work was concerned. The rest of my life I've left to impulse and accident. But certainly in regard to work, I have had a conscious plan, which I've carried out pretty well.
But leaving happiness to chance and impulse, do you think that works quite well?
Oh, I think it depends on luck to an enormous degree. And also upon how your work goes.
What do you think are the ingredients that make for happiness?
Well, I think four are the most important. Perhaps the first of them is health. Second, sufficient means to keep you from want. Third, happy personal relations. And fourth, successful work.
What about health? Why do you attach so much importance to that?
Well, I think if you have certain kinds of ill health, it's very difficult indeed to be happy. Certain kinds of ill health affect the mind and cause you to be miserable. Certain other kinds of ill health you can bear stoically, but there are some you can't.
Do you think that being healthy makes you happy, or being happy makes you healthy?
Well, I think primarily being healthy makes you happy, but the other does work too. I think that a happy man is much less likely to get ill than an unhappy one.
And you have a happier day, say, on a night of the morning after you slept well than on a morning when you slept bad, though.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Take the case of one's income. How much importance do you attach to that?
Well, that depends upon the standard you're used to. If you're used to being rather poor, you don't need a very large income. If you're used to being very rich, you feel miserable unless your income is fairly large. So it's all a question of what you're used to, I think.
This can slop over, though, into a kind of obsessional pursuit of money, can't it?
Oh, very easily, and it often does. And you find that the richest men are in terror of dying in the workhouse. That often happens.
So too much money doesn't necessarily make for happiness at all.
No, I think money is a sort of minimum requirement, and you don't want to have to think about it too much. If you have to think about it too much, you get worried.
You placed personal relationships third on the list. Did you mean by that that you think it's third in priority?
No, as far as my experience goes, I should say it's the first requisite, or certainly the first after health.
Can you explain a bit more what you mean by that?
Oh, well, I thought it was fairly obvious what one means. One means friendship, one means love, one means relations with one's children, all those sort of intimate, close personal relations. And if they're unhappy, it makes life pretty difficult.
Work. Now, how high would you place that, the importance of successful work?
Very high indeed, in the case of all energetic people. Some people are more lethargic and don't depend on work so much. But if you're at all energetic, you must have an outlet for your energy, and work is the obvious outlet. And, of course, work won't make you happy if it's unsuccessful. But if it's successful, it does fill your day and add enormously to happiness.
Does it matter what sort of work?
No, I don't think it does, except that some kinds of work are precarious. I mean, I suppose, I should think at least that if I were a member of the Politburo, the work was a little anxious. But
this might provide a stimulus for somebody who likes that sort of thing.
Yes, if you like that sort of thing, it would be all right.
But the lowliness or the elevation of the work, is that important?
Well, no, that depends upon your temperament. Some people can't be happy unless they're engaged in great achievements. Others can be quite happy with little achievements. It's a matter of temperament, that. But your work ought to be such as your capacities will enable you to do successfully.
What you're saying
seems to suggest that one would be fortunate to be lazy because then one would be contented with very much less work.
Yes, but you wouldn't be as happy, at least as far as my experience goes. The happiness of a really good, successful piece of difficult work is very, very great indeed, and I don't think the lethargic person ever experiences anything equal to it.
If you were told that you could have more pleasure if you were less intelligent, how would you react?
Oh, I wouldn't do it. No, I would indeed be prepared to have less pleasure if I could get a little more intelligence.
What are the factors that militate against happiness?
Well, there are quite a number, apart from the opposites of the things we're talking about. One of the things that militates against happiness is worry. And that's one respect in which I've become much happier as I've grown older. I worry much less. And I found a very useful plan in regard to worry, which is to think, now, what is the very worst thing that could happen? And then think, well, after all, it wouldn't be so very bad. 100 years hence, it probably wouldn't matter. And after you've really made yourself think that, you won't worry so much. Worry comes from not facing unpleasant possibilities.
Are you able to shut out worry at will?
Not completely, no, but to a very great extent.
Where do you place envy?
Oh, envy, yes, it's a terrible source of unhappiness to a great many people. I remember the painter Haydon, who wasn't a very good painter, but wished he was, kept a diary. And he records in this diary, spent a miserable morning comparing myself with Raphael.
Would you elaborate this question of envy a bit more?
Well, I think a great many people who have quite a lot that might make them happy worry because somebody else seems to have a bit more. Somebody else has a better car or a better garden or how nice it would be to live in a happier climate. Or how much more recognition so-and-so's work gets. Things like that. And instead of enjoying what is there for them to enjoy, the pleasure of it is taken away by the thought that perhaps somebody else has more, which ought not to matter.
Yes, but mightn't envy be a good thing in the sense that if you envy somebody else's work because you think it may be better than yours, it might be a stimulant to you to do your own work better.
Yes, it might, but it also acts as a stimulus to do worse work, I think. And above all, to try to interfere with the other person's work. There are two ways of getting ahead of the other man. One is to get ahead yourself, and the other is to keep him back.
Boredom. How important do you think boredom is?
I think it's enormously important. And I think it's... I won't say it's distinctively human, because I've looked at apes in the zoo, and they seem to me to be experiencing boredom. But I don't think other animals do. I think it's a mark of higher intelligence. But I think the importance of it is quite enormous, and you can see it from the way that savages, when they first come in contact with civilized people, want, above all things, alcohol. They want it far more than they want the light of the gospel or even blue beads. And they want it because, for a moment, it takes away boredom.
But how is one to overcome boredom? And people say who girls who are quite well educated, then marry, then have nothing else to do but look after the house.
Well, it's a bad social system. I don't think that you can always alter it by individual action. But that example that you give, which is nowadays very important, shows that we haven't got a proper social system, because everybody ought to be able to exercise whatever useful skill he or she possesses. And modern, highly educated women, after they marry, are not so very well able to, but that's a defect in our social system.
How far does it help one to be happy, to understand one's own motives for doing things and avoid self-deception?
Oh, I think it helps a great deal. All sorts of people take up either The hatred of some person or the hatred of some group of persons or something, under the impression that it's a noble idealism that is prompting them, when it, in fact, may very likely not be. And if they could realize that, I think they'd be happier.
Do you think a lot of people are made unhappy by deceiving themselves?
Oh, yes, I think a very great many.
Do you think it's possible to be happy in adversity, in prison, say? Now, you were in jail yourself.
Oh, well, I had a very pleasant time in jail, but then I was in the First Division where they didn't inflict the ordinary hardships of prison life at all. But I think prison life, as it ordinarily comes to most prisoners, is very, very difficult for a man accustomed to mental work. It's much easier if you're accustomed to manual work, because you're not deprived so much of what makes your life.
Do you think it's easier to be happy, say, in prison, in the condition that you were in when you thought you were in for a good cause, than if you think you're in because you deserved it?
Oh, certainly, yes. I mean, if they'd given me the same sentence for stealing spoons, I should have been quite unhappy, because I should have felt, well, I'm disgraced, this is horrid. But as it was, I didn't feel disgraced.
Simply because it was a matter of principle?
Yes.
But do you think that it helps people to be happy, to have some cause to live for and with?
Yes, provided they can succeed, more or less. I think if it's a cause in which there's no success, they don't get happy. But if they can get a measure of success from time to time, then I think it does. And I think I should go on from that to another thing, which is that wide interests, especially as one gets older, are a very important element in happiness. The more your interests are impersonal and extend beyond your own life, the less you will mind the prospect that your own life may be going to come to an end before very long. And I think that's a very important element of happiness in old age.
Thank you, Lord Russell.